welcome to Three Wise DMs, the podcast for three dungeon masters who've been doing this for way too long. Talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
Hey there, Cthulhu, down there in your sunken city. You're a billion light years distant, and the stars look very pretty from Relay. So close and yet so far away. E-I-E-A. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey there, Delilah. Yes! Hello, everyone. Welcome back to an episode of Three Wise DMs. This is the Rock and Roll DM, DM Dave. I'm really getting into this kind of like I'm a radio disc jockey kind of feel, right? Like it sounds that way. I have a rhythm about it.
I was unfamiliar with that tune.
Everyone is unfamiliar with this tune. Hey There Cthulhu, the song by Eben Brooks and Allison Lonsdale. So Eben Brooks, E-B-E-N. B-R-O-O-K-S. I'm throwing it out to him because this dude wrote an entire song with Hey There Delilah as Hey There Cthulhu. He also has like a whole superheroes album. He's got like a Star Trek album.
Stuff like
dude,
that.
It's
That's
intense.
What I thought it was at first.
Yeah. It's intense. It's next level. I had to throw it in. So there it is. So Hey There Cthulhu. What are we talking about? We are talking about the game that we've talked about now for several weeks. So we were talking about our character backstory episode, the last episode, where we were talking about kind of getting ready for this Cthulhu one-shot that we were going to be playing through. My article this past week talked about a lot of the stuff we learned of it, and we have a very, very special episode tonight because we have the DM herself who the Keeper of Arcane Lore herself who ran us through this really awesome, intense Call of Cthulhu session. And we're going to kind of do a grab bag episode here of all the stuff that we kind of learned and how it went in this episode. So I'm going to throw it to our special guest. Let her introduce herself.
Hi. Yeah, my name is Elizabeth. I'm excited to be here talking to you guys. I listened to the episode.
You should. We don't usually have guests, so you should be very,
well,
very...
I feel very honored.
Though. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, everyone out there asking to be guests. No. We make the guests.
So I guess very honored. I listened to the episode from two Sundays ago again, and this is my second time listening to it. And so I'm so curious to talk about this because I'm well aware that some of you are very skeptical about how this whole process was going to go. I don't think, well, some of us have talked about like your thoughts and feelings post game, but I haven't heard from everyone. So I'm very excited about this. I have spent a lot of time playing Cthulhu. It's one of my favorite systems. I was in a 2.5 year campaign for Cthulhu. And then this actually was my first time running a Cthulhu game. So I'm very excited about being able to chat about that.
I'm just going to throw it out real quick before Tony takes the reins here. That's the hot take here, that this was the first time that Elizabeth had jumped.
I was 10 years old when I learned behind that. The screen. Like, wow, I did not know that was your first
right?
time. Wow.
Especially after the game that had happened. So, all right, let's do this.
You know, I was pretty surprised to find out it was the first time that you ran something like this, because I was certainly fooled. With the depth of the backstory you asked from all the players, did you have any concerns about working through most or all of this material with just running a singular one-shot?
No, and I think it was really interesting listening to you guys talk about your conception of what backstory is and how it fits into a game. So any of your listeners who either play or write horror TTRPG, whether it's one shots or campaigns, might be familiar with the concept of seven knives. It's this idea that as a, whether it's a DM or a GM, keeper, whatever you are, when you're running horror games, you're looking for these seven pain points in your players. And it's essentially whether it's values, key relationships, memories, these things that your players have built into their backstory that hold emotional weight. And you want, you shoot for seven of them because it gives you this range of things that you can essentially, as a horror like GM, poke at to give the player that emotional, visceral experience. So when I asked for this really elaborate backstory, I had 20
questions, people. 20 questions.
Multi-layered. Not yes. even single.
Yeah, with sub-questions, yes.
Yes. I wasn't ever expecting that all of that was going to play out in a one-shot. But what I was looking for were very key emotional things that I could pull on threads that I could then use. And for those of you who got those in your game, they came out in dreams or visions or, you know, in Chris's character, in some ways, the way he died. And so, no, like, I wasn't anticipating all of that coming out. I was looking for content that actually I could use to create that emotional horror experience, right? Like that fear of losing something you care about, or grief, or, you know, those types of, the reason we go and watch horror movies, right, is because, like, you want to be afraid of losing something you care about.
Definitely. And that was, it was really cool. Actually, the way my character died, I'm still geeking about it. We could talk more about that later. But the one of the things I really enjoyed, besides the questions, which I think watching them having played out in actual the session and everything like that, it makes a lot more sense and you get a lot more of the feel for it, like, once you actually get on the bike and do it. But the thing that I think that added a lot to it is all the handouts. You had a bunch of different bits of material, newspaper articles, magazine articles, different things, flyers and stuff like that. Some of that obviously comes from the module, but where did you get a lot of ideas for doing that kind of stuff, which I think was really neat and added an immersion to it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that came from the nature of the story that you chose. So we were playing in a small Texas town, and the assumption was that, well, and you guys also went the direction of playing townsfolk, right? So everyone had the choice to be like a news crew. I think if we had gone the news crew route, there may have honestly been slightly less pre-game content. But But the fact that you all chose to be townspeople meant that I had to figure out how to get you hooked and, like, already willing to go and investigate Kelly, Leland, or not Leland, that's the town, Kelly's death. And so that was a tool for me. It also, it was a tool for me to get you as players to buy in, like your character buy in for, like, why are we doing this thing, right? It also came from, in some ways, not knowing this group, right? Because, like, some of you I literally never met until the day that you walked in and we sat down and 2 minutes later played together. But, like, hearing some of the, like, some of your feedback on, like, how the group played, who tended to talk more, who tended to fall back more, like, it was very intentional to try and get you all kind of equally excited and kind of equally on the same page in terms of motivation as, like, actual players. Because what I was really hoping for is that we would come into that room with similar energy, despite the fact that I hadn't met half of you and I had no real idea how you were all going to play. I was really shooting for immersive narrative play style. And so a lot of that content ahead of time was to try and invite that.
Yeah, as you guys can go back to the previous episode when we were talking about backstory, I think throughout the whole episode, I think I was the biggest one being like, you know what, I don't know yet. I'm kind of waiting to see what happens, because Elizabeth, what you said was the biggest thing. So there's two things for context here that I think are important. The first, what Chris was saying in last episode, the first thing he said was, the context is, this was for a one shot. And most people, when they're doing a one shot, we're going to get together for 4 to 6 hours or whatever. We're going to run an adventure. We're going to roll some dice. We're going to have fun. And you took a much more focused attack on it for a lot of good reasons. It's funny, though, because recently both Matt Colville and also Dan Masters over at Professor Dungeon Master and Dungeon Craft, both started talking. They had separate episodes that came up about backstory and about, is backstory important and how much should you do it? And it was funny because you start to see this kind of parallel evolution that we all start to kind of jump on the same thing, or they're huge 3WD fans and they're just listening to the episode. And if they are, guys,
I think they may have stole some of that. Yeah.
Give us a call. I mean, I would love to talk to both of you guys. I know you're a Gen Con right now, but anyway, but I think one of the biggest things that this context was for, this was not D&D, this was not Pathfinder, this was not Marvel, this was not, whatever. It was Call of Cthulhu. And I think for me, I wrote down here, I said system, system, system. The system itself requires a level of immersion and buy-in to get what you're looking for out of it. And I think with Elizabeth, what you were doing, because again, the second piece of context is you knew some of the people in the game group. You had not gamed outside of some of our board game nights that we've done when we've come over. You have not gamed in that way. We've talked about gaming. And that's what, like last week's article kind of went over, is that if you want to become a better DM, stop playing with the same people. I put it out. It was a clickbait thing. But it's that keep putting new people behind the screen, keep putting new people at the table, because it completely throws everything you know out the window, you know, and then picks up those pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And honestly, a lot of what I did as, like, especially running my first game was,
again, that is the hottest take here, because every three of us, we have run a lot of games, and none of us, I think, were any the wiser that you had not run that game before. So
yeah, I mean, it was like, two or three days later that I was like, oh, I don't think they realized that was my first game. I should probably
tell
them.
Did I mention this is my first game? No, you did not.
But a lot of the choices that I made were very intentional to kind of undo or not do things that I had felt really frustrated by as a player at times playing in a Call of Cthulhu world. It is very different, I think, than playing in a Dungeons and Dragons world. I haven't played Marvel, but just from hearing you guys talk about it, I think it sounds like it's pretty different.
It's awesome. It's one of the best games out there.
Drastically different. Yes. Sorry. You're not human beings going to die falling down the stairs.
Right. And I think that's such a, like, one of the reasons that I really love Call of Cthulhu, and I think I had kind of, maybe Chris, you haven't heard this perspective from me, but you other two have, like, one of the reasons that I love Call of Cthulhu so much is that there is an element of like fragility to it. You go into that game, even if you're playing a campaign, you go into that game assuming at some point you're going to lose your character. Either you're going to go completely insane or you are going to die. And there's, to me as a player and also as a GM, almost a level of freedom, right? Like, I think sometimes I've played with so many, like, chaos players who just, like, love running off and trying to kill themselves. And in Dungeons and Dragons, that can be really frustrating. In Call of Cthulhu, it's like, cool, go do it. I'm going to make this super horrifying and really satisfying for you. And I kind of love that. It's such a different way to play a game. And I've definitely sat at Call of Cthulhu tables where that wasn't really allowed. And I think that was a big part of what I was trying to create, is a space where, as players that I knew hadn't really played this game before, that you could take some risks, right, with some safety in that. I guaranteed you all that unless you did something super stupid, you were going to make it to the end, right? I wanted you all to at least make it to end game. But also, like, there's a freedom there to maybe take some risks that you probably wouldn't take with your Marvel character or your Dungeons and Dragons character that you're trying to keep around for 6 months to a year or maybe longer. And so, yeah, I think a lot of the choices that I made or even just in response to things that frustrated me. And I think as a DM, I'm very experiential. Like, I want my players to walk away feeling something. And that really was one of my goals. And I think even going back to the like pre-game content, I wanted you to feel something. And when everyone started role-playing in the chat about the loose cattle article, I was like, okay, this worked. Like, this is what I wanted you to do. And so that, I think, was a lot of my motivation, too.
No, I think that worked actually really well, because it really allowed some players who don't do a lot of role play at the table to really get in. I mean, like with when Bonnie and Veronica went into a whole, they literally had built out like a conversation that their two characters were going to have, and they played it out when you did the intro. I think that showed it. Real quick before, I know, Tony, you want to say something, but that is a really great tip, though, is that run the game that you want to play in. If you do that, and I think that's kind of what we're always, all DMs are trying to do. We're, you know, really run the game that you want to play in. And I think it's going to play to all the strengths that you would have when you're running the game, too.
So we could talk about, and we have all the character prep that we did. But really, that was nothing compared to the actual prep that you did. You created a website for the church. You created Reddit chats. There was updates happening throughout the story after you introduced the hook. There, of course, there was handouts which all tied into the individual stories while people were role-playing. And Call of Cthulhu is usually not like my thing, but I gotta tell you, that was the strongest pregame that I have ever experienced in any system.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, that was the goal. I had so much fun creating all of that content, and even like learning, like, I didn't know how to make a Reddit post before that. And like, I sent it to my husband, John, and he came down and he was like, I'm a little afraid of how good this looks, because now I feel like you're going to start sending me fake Reddit posts and I don't know if I can trust what you send me anymore. So it was very fun to really get into this. And yeah, I mean, it was a lot of work, but like, again, so I don't know how to, like, it's so worth it as the person running the game to get the feedback and to watch you all. I probably will say this another 500 times, but I wanted you to feel something. And so every time, you know, Dave, when you would text me like angry about this pastor who wasn't real and who you didn't know, but like that visceral reaction of like, I hate this person. I hate this person. And he hasn't even showed up in game yet. Like, that to me is worth any of that work, right? Because that's what I'm trying to create in all of you, is this like visceral emotional experience.
So just before you just jump in there, how many hours are we talking?
Yeah.
I don't
know. You can't really count it, but no, I think a good point to that is, so we played, this was Theater of the Mind, you know, we didn't have like little mini Cthulhu guys out there. And Elizabeth, you had even asked, like, do you guys play with a lot of, and I said, well, yeah, we do a lot of terrain stuff in D&D, but with Cthulhu, that's going to be different. But if I'm spending time putting together the map or something, or painting some minis, right? Or Scott or the Wizard Washburn is putting together stuff. That's all time spent in the same way. So it kind of goes back to what we always say, which is spend the time on the things that you think are important. Chris?
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking like there's a prep is important. Like one of the things that you brought to the game was you had a bunch of material you didn't use, I'm sure, in there that you had ready. And at first you'd be like, oh my God, it's like the Mike Shea, like I'm preparing nothing. But I think there's something important in that, is that you understood the world that you were putting everybody in. So it made it much easier when someone made a left turn and Dave wanted to go talk to the sheriff or whatever it was and stuff like that, that you could easily, because you already knew who that person was, you knew enough about the town in there. So I think that that's a good lesson in of itself. If you have the time for prep, you don't want to over prep it, but understand what it is that your world is. Understand the city, understand the people in it, because it makes it that you can then have a much more organic thing. But that was a couple of things. I think it was like getting the players telling the same story. The handouts and the questions beforehand were really like a really pro gamer move kind of idea, because it gets you, it's that pregame where Tony's talking about, like, it's, we all got there and we were talking, we understood the town to a large degree, as much, you obviously understood it more because you're the keeper, but we had a feeling like we were there, even if I'm just a, you know, I of course had to be different, so my guy just happened to show up into town there, but I still felt like I knew the stuff there through all the handouts and everything like that. It created a real thing. And then finally, like, the personal experience, like, I think you kind of talked about it. I think that I myself had it. I felt like you were able to touch every player at the table there at some point during the 4 to 6 hours, and through what you had learned about them, try to, you know, you gained a connection with each of them around the table there, which I thought was really something there. I don't know if that turns into a question or not, but it was just things that I saw that I think there are things that can be applied. It works, obviously, in the tool of very narrative heavy, but I think it can work in other games like that too. It's that idea of, as I'm going around, make sure that I spend a minute talking to Dave, make sure I make some, that Tony gets some shine in this game, make sure that we all are, like, that everybody knows what was going on and that we're all telling the same story. So yeah, it was a very good time, and it was your first time too, which I'm still just, I'm still blown away. That was very good. And it's, yeah, like, it was, it, the fact that you had prepped like that made it so that it was imperceptible to guys like us. Like, we had assumed that you had, you know, played keeper before. Played Deception keeper. Is that the correct terminology? But yes.
It is. Yes, you're a keeper in Cthulhu. Yeah.
Chris, exactly that. Every single person had a time. Every single player literally had a 5 minute introduction, give or take. Well, you know, your character was a bit, you know.
I wasn't expecting a preamble going in.
But I mean, that's one of the things, and we could talk about this if we want, but it was one of the things that Elizabeth, you had done to set it up, which was to pair each of us off with someone so that in essence you had like the buddy system, as it were. And we could talk about that. But one of the things that I think that I actually reference again in the article from last week, and you guys can go, because I actually linked to the only time that I've actually seen it done. And it was the first thing I said after the game. I said it was a bold choice, because what you did, and we've talked about it afterwards, but what you did was you did something that you want to be doing when you're live streaming, you know, when you're doing an actual play podcast or something like that, because you have a literal audience tuning into your media content. When you're at your home game, there is no audience. You guys are all just playing together. But what you did, which is what they did in this one game, which was actually a Marvel game using Alpha Flight, so like I literally had to watch it at the time. But they took this cinematic narrative focus where you literally would start explaining camera angles and stuff as we zoom in on this area. And you were having us be the player, the character, and the audience all in the same moment. So, for instance, when my Gary, the hardware store owner, whose grandfather was actually an old brujo, an old sorcerer from, you know, old Mexico and whatever. So I delved into that way. But when I was doing my intro, I was in the back of my store getting ready for the funeral. But you created the scene that everyone at the table was seeing the scene like you would in a show or a movie. And I thought it was a very bold choice for a home game, but I was surprised how well it actually was working. So, whether there's a question there, but it was definitely a really interesting way of approaching running it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you, Dave, you and I have had this conversation, you have said to me, it is really hard if you're not a professional voice actor to record a live play game, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think every time we had that conversation, I was like, no, you can totally do it. And if we had recorded that, it would have been fine. I don't think the editing on that, well, other than all of you guys getting up and talking over each other, but like you guys were so in character.
Had to get drinks and stuff.
Right. You guys were so in character when you were playing that there wasn't a lot of that, right? Because you were just flowing with the story that we were collaboratively telling. And so I really have kind of always felt that, like, if you have a table of people who are willing to do it, and I think that's the biggest thing, jumping into role play can feel really vulnerable if you haven't done it a lot or if you don't do it often. Pretending to be another character feels silly if you're not doing it all the time. So it does depend on the table. And when it comes to like the narrative stuff, like kind of painting a narrative scene that you're telling for the players, right? That creative written narration is not for the in-game character. That's for the experience of the player sitting at your table. You have to have a table that's not going to like meta in a really annoying way, right? Like they have to be willing to take in the experience of it and enjoy it as the player and then set that aside and go into character and play their character where they are, right? So like Dave in the scene that you were describing, you know, like if me, like we did your intro and then we zoomed out to Matt's character coming in, if you had like meta'd weird and been like, well, I'm already out there and like hadn't let me paint that picture and like naturally let the scene go, right? Like it wouldn't have worked.
Absolutely.
Right. And so you do have to have a certain group of people who have some buy-in to it, but it's such a fun way of playing a game if you have a table of players who really enjoy that. It's immersive, that level of immersion.
Yeah. I think it's funny. And Tony, I want you to jump in on this because it was a possible plan that we were hatching. So like, the hardest thing is like, as opposed to like D&D or something where you're completely this other fantasy character in a fantasy world, we were in Leland, Texas in 2003, right? So like, we're just people in this small town. And like at one point, Tony and I are hatching a plan to go break into the sheriff's office to get in for, and I'm like, I pulled back on it because like that's not what people would do. But like I was like, well, we need to like push the adventure forward. So it's funny when you said like when you're meta-ing, because you're also, we say it all the time, like we're not in a movie or a TV show. We are still playing a game. So playing in a very modern, real world situation definitely created that. And Tony, you were warning me off of that a little bit, I think. Trying to play the character.
Like, as you guys were driving over to break in, he was like, yeah, this might not be a great idea.
I was literally getting a drink in the kitchen. I was getting a drink in the kitchen. I went, no, we really should, like, I'm going to talk to him on the way over to the sheriff's office and say, I don't think we should. I think we got in over our heads.
So. Yeah, no, that's a tough sell. We're going to break into the police station to steal a notebook. I mean, like, where do I not want to break into? Also, the cemetery. Yeah, and the police station. Absolutely no. And the risk is also higher, too. I'm not a guy with 30 hit points that's going to crash through the window and steal the stuff on a sleight of hand check and run out.
Yeah, we're not the Terminator, right? We're like literally driving through the police station, right? Yeah, exactly.
No, that would be entirely different. What's interesting is that on the surface, the game's main attraction, at least for the hook, was this haunted hell house. And, you know, that was all. I can't even imagine the amount of prep that you had inside there. And this kind of reminds me of Curse of Strahd in a matter of speaking, because we only saw a few rooms of that house.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet it didn't detract from the story. And honestly, you know, if you go through Curse of Strahd, you could probably come to the conclusion that the point is for you to crawl around every room of every building in every town, and it's that would have just detracted from the narrative and the immersion, so that it worked out very smoothly, that we just really cut to the chase in this respect.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you guys miss stuff, and
super stuff.
I mean, like, not going to the sheriff's office, so Chris's character got a coded journal entry, the sheriff's ledger had the key to that code. Like, you guys would have, if you had gotten that, you could have decoded that journal entry, because that's what the ledger was. And it was actually a real code. I was going to hand you a book, and you would have had to, as actual players, figure out what that code was.
Oh, thank God we didn't do that. I fucking hate puzzles. I fucking hate them.
It could have been a riddle.
Riddles. You hate riddles.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Or like, shopping list. It could have gotten worse.
Yeah, I'll go just, yeah, I'll literally have a whole session of watching someone shop in a town before I want a riddle. Okay, so I think this is a good segue for it, though, because I want to talk about it. Now, as we've all found, anyone who's run one-shots, and we talk about it all the time, that clock, it's like a football game. You're playing against the clock, and all of a sudden you're like, all right, well, for the sake of time, we have to, boom. We could have easily turned this this investigation into 3 nights, maybe 4 nights, and really gone deep into it. And I don't think it would have worn out its welcome at all. But, Elizabeth, you finished it in one night. But the big thing that we had to kind of get to, and it's what I want to talk about, is the giant reveal, which was the plant that you put into the game prior to with this knowledge. So, like, just give us kind of a high overview, and then I want to hear everybody's thoughts on that, because that was, I thought that was like chef's kiss Cthulhu kind of level.
So I've probably ruined the ability for John to ever play with you guys again, but I did, because you'll never trust him ever, period.
Right. We're just always just like just axing him for
red herring.
Yeah, right. So I had my husband John join, and he actually was essentially the BBEG. So I feel like we have layers of BBEGs in Cthulhu. There was the entity that was actually in the house, like trapped in the house, trying to break through. And then there was John, who is a real human, who was part of a cult that worshipped a like legit elder god, Gadon Athoa, who is the son of Cthulhu. And
also,
the way,
just as a fun little thing, longtime listeners will know, I mean, we called him Gadon Athoa, but that was our BBEG in Thorin's 4-year Woodstock Wanderers campaign. Was in essence going to break out of the world, because the world we were on was his egg. Yeah, so it was fun that you chose
I had no idea.
The elder god, yeah.
So anyway, the reason I chose him actually was because the entity that was written, so this did come from a pre-written one shot. I essentially rewrote the whole thing because the original one shot was not good. There was no win condition in the original, so I kind of reworked it. But the original entity in the one shot was a Loiger, and he, I think lore wise, ruled over Loigers, and so that's why I chose him as the elder god that John's character was summoning. So John had his own side mission the entire time, and you know, in terms of what he knew, what he didn't know, he knew, I would say, 80% of his mission. Like, he knew what he was trying to accomplish. He had a decent amount of information on how he was going to have to accomplish that. But he was missing some key pieces, just because I wanted him to be able to play the game and have that player experience. And so essentially there were like 3 possible endings-ish. There probably were close to 8 endings that you guys could have gotten just based on how things went. But one of them was that you found out John and you stopped him, but you didn't stop the summoning of the Loiger. One of them was that you found out John, you found out Ted Weaver, and you stopped the summoning of the Loiger, which would have been probably what you would consider the good ending, right? Like, you guys would have won. And then there was the ending that you got, which is where you didn't find out John and you essentially assisted him in ending the world. And I think if we had played longer, you guys would have had more of a chance.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It so had if we a had very cabin in the woods feel at the end.
Well, that's what I was going for.
Just, yeah.
That is what I was going for. I'm not kidding. Like, there were a couple of horror movies that I really was, like, kind of inspired by, and that was one of them.
One of the greatest horror movies out there, I think. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I was going to say, it's like, we had talked before, and I said, like, I want to be a kind of a crazy guy, so I was, like, a willing participant in the end of the world here. But I wanted to get a little bit into the Cthulhu mythos, and I thought you did a really cool thing there where you obviously delivered me stuff. Now, looking back on it, I see where the plant was that was, like, it was the hook to get me, and then John was, like, the stone. But it provided me with so much stuff, just like the handouts, like that bit of mythos and how it actually ended up tying into the story, to the point where he flipped that book around the one time and there was that little Egyptian symbol in there. And I'm like, oh, like it was like endorphin rush. Like, oh, hey, I know what that is. I've seen that in the stuff that you sent over. So I think that was, it really created something interesting and unique. The mythos wasn't just lore for the sake of lore. Like it was, so it had that cool Cthulhu vibe, but it was actionable, because for a while there I wasn't quite sure. Like I'm like, you sent me over the things and I'm like, she's really gonna have all this in here, I don't know, or whatever like that. And then by the time we got to the end, I was like, wow, like as things kept popping there, I thought that was really something that was especially if you're in Cthulhu games. But I think like lore wise like that, we kind of talk about it a little bit, Dave, too, sometimes it's like giving people the information and they'll bring it out for you. Like, so I would start talking about the Covenant. Absolutely. Of the Burning Hand, because I had been reading about it before we had started playing. So as soon as I get things about it, all of a sudden I'm starting to throw in stuff from the stuff that has been seeded with me here. So now I'm creating like some narrative with it. So I thought that was really neat.
And I think also in Cthulhu, at least, right, like the rule is if you take mythos points, you lose sanity, right? Like you start like at a disadvantage in terms of sanity. And I really wanted to make that sacrifice rewarding, right? Like it didn't feel, not that you guys rolled a ton of sanity checks. And I think a lot of that just had to do with time. But like, if you were willing to do that, I wanted to make it worth it.
Oh God. Yeah. No, I was like, I was probably the wrong guy to have for any of the other outcomes, where I was just like, he was like, oh, there's a book. I was like, all right, let's read out of it. Wait, there's a bone knife. That's probably for good stuff. It's okay. I'll get in the middle of the circle.
That's a letter opener. So, I mean, I get tossing out the printed material, cause that's really my MO as well. I will say Nicodemus was a very deep plant, because he was one of the townsfolk. I'm living in Leland. What is there, 88 people here? And he never tripped any. I had no "that guy's a weirdo" tips leading up into that point. Also, we probably could have stopped him, but, you know, one shot. So we needed some more investigation, some more time to really do all the things. We didn't use all of our lot of time. That was our prerogative. We felt we solved it. Even if I honestly, Chris was more sus because he was the outsider of the town. He's like, I don't feel good. I'm like, what's the matter? You got like a demonic parasite? So, I mean, that all could have come into play there. Even if we had got on to John and blown him away for the ritual, the Loiger still would have gotten loose. Really can't stop that. The only real win condition that my character, who knows nothing about magic, you're like, we got to stop that. He doesn't even believe, he barely believes in God. He doesn't believe in these weird aliens that are coming out of the ground, hypothetically, was just to burn the place to the ground, which I said 2 minutes in. Like, that was my character's gut reaction. He's like, yeah, it's time to burn this place down. And I did not, because I couldn't do that to you.
Right. And that was the win condition for you guys. Like, you guys, if you had burned the house down, that would have put that. So it's interesting, right? Because in Cthulhu, my goal is that actually, like, there's no good ending, because that is Cthulhu. Like you can't actually control these beings. Like, that's just beyond us. So if you had burned the house down, it essentially would have just put it into slumber. And there would have been some epilogue about, like, you know, you knowing and sensing that, like, the town is safe for now, but, like, 50-100 years down the road, we're right back where we started, right? But I did think it was very funny, like, you know, like being there when you literally were like, let's go burn it down. I was like, well, that'll end this game real fast.
I couldn't do that as a DM. There's just no way.
Well, also, but like, that's part of the beauty of the system, is that you are role-playing a normal person in a normal town with normal laws that you abide by. So you're not just going to be like, let's just go arson this joint, right?
No, and I think kind of to her point, it's the idea is it's a Cthulhu story. Like, I think when we first played the first campaign with Thorin, we went in with the idea like it was D&D or one of these other things where we're creating these lasting characters and noble, heroic thing. And then things go sideways. You're going crazy. You got your tie freaking wrapped around your head. You work out a shotgun and stuff like that. And I think later on, I got a couple of the solo Cthulhu adventures. And the one thing that I noticed is there was never a good ending there. It was a good ending, but it wasn't like I was like saving the world. It was like I was discovering stuff. And then the sky opened up and freaking the Elder Gods came in and the world ended. And that was the end of the solo adventure or something like that. So I think that sort of steeled me for this. And then I was like, I was probably like an unintentional plant because I was like, all right, well, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to go crazy and die in this because it's a one shot. I'm a mythos guy and I'm that kind of guy. Like, I want to kind of grab it because I was like, you know what? Like, let lean in on Cthulhu a little bit like that because you're kind of frail. So I think that that in itself, it makes it a different kind of vibe so much in that you like to truly embrace it. You kind of go in with that idea is that this is temporary. They're frail. Like, I may have to bring in another investigator if it's a campaign or something like that, but there's something beautiful about the frailty there. Like, I had as much fun as I've had in other things with that character, even with him dying at the end. That almost was like a it was like fate, right? Like, it was like, oh, this was perfect. Like, as soon as he jammed the knife in there, number one, I was like, whoa, right? But then I was like, oh, that's cool as hell, right? Like, you know, all right, so what, I'm gonna like lose, but this is like, what a story. So that was really something.
Chris, that's a good point, because it kind of goes to what we say a lot of times, which is you got to play to the source material that you're pulling from. And what you're saying is exactly right, because there is not a single Lovecraft story where there is a good ending. The best you get is that the man who is narrating it at the end, as he's writing the last bit, something is coming up behind to suck out his brains. Like, that is the best that you ever get, right? And maybe no one else gets to discover it, and it stays up in its Cyclopean fortress in Antarctica or something. But that's – so it's the source material, right? And it's staying to that and understanding that that's the game, you know? All right, so it's about time for some final thoughts. We probably have a lot more thoughts to discuss, but we're going to go into some final thoughts, and we are going to let our guest, GM, Keeper of Arcane Lore, DM, whatever we want to call it. I don't really care, but it's Three Wise DMs. So, Elizabeth, let's give us your final thoughts on everything, on this whole experiment of yours.
Yeah, final thoughts. Yeah, on everything, I don't know. I mean, this was immensely fun. I felt like it was a wild success more than I was anticipating, you know, like processing it afterwards. I think the only thing that I maybe wish that I had caught in the moment was when you guys got to the end of day one, is almost like having the presence of mind in that moment to like pause as a keeper and be like, guys, we are 3 hours into this and you just finished day one. Do we actually want to extend this, right? Because it was at that point that I was like, to finish this tonight, we are cutting a ton. Like, you guys were supposed to get to Saturday night. It ended Friday afternoon, essentially. So we missed an entire day's worth of play. So I think if I were to have done anything, that's what I would have offered the players, is the opportunity to pivot in the moment and say, like, do we stop here? And even if it's in 2 or 3 months, do we like do 2 more of these one shots? But I will also say the momentum and the energy in that room that night was so good. You risk losing that, right? Like, I think with how in you guys were, we probably could have continued it because it seemed like you were all having a lot of fun and were really bought into the mystery of it. So, you know, I think it could have been very fun to extend it. But at the same time, I loved being able to play off of, you know, the energy that was there. And I think everyone had a really experiential, emotional, fun end experience to that. I mean, we didn't talk about it, but like that moment, Dave, that your character literally just like shot John in the chest and just like blew him away as soon as he finished the ritual was like,
I like
cinematic.
I also like that I didn't have to roll my gun roll. I just got to blow a hole.
Because you would have missed.
You know? Yeah, exactly, right?
Like, but again, and I think I would say this. This is what I would throw out to DMs. Depending on the game you're, right, going to what you were saying about, like, play to the system. Depending on the game you're playing, sometimes you just got to let it happen. Just let it happen. It's fun. And so, like, this is our game. This is what we're doing. Like, could I have made you roll? Yes. If we're in a 8-foot box and you pull out a freaking shotgun and shoot someone in the chest from 3 feet away, are you missing them? No. Like, it's just not going to happen.
We were talking about it prior to where we said, like, I don't have to always, like, just every time I get in a car doesn't mean I have to make a drive auto roll. Like, every time, like, I'm just going to the store, I have to make sure, you know,
Yeah.
So use it sparingly. Yeah.
I think so. Again, like, it depends on your system. If you have a table that loves crunch, then they would hate that. They want to roll. But, like, there was something to that environment where it was so fun. It was so fun to, like, have that be part of the ending. And so I think for me, I loved how it went, even with, you know, cutting a bunch. I think it leaves the door open for us to revisit Leland in the future if people want to play. Chris, I've actually like thought about texting you this week. Tony knows this, but I have a fabulous idea for a possible character for you.
You're not
that
dead.
Also might stretch you a little bit. You are dead, but it would be a new character. But I have this very fun idea that Tony thinks is crazy, but I think it would be so fun. And so I think it left the door open for us to go back and reprise some of the roles, learn more about the town. So even though we cut a lot, I think I can bring a lot of that back. So I feel like it was a wild success. I had a ton of fun, and I hope we can keep playing because I would love to.
Now that's the last time you're playing with us. One injection there, it's done. it was awesome. The pregame, the amount of work that you put in there to set the mood, to really put that all together, was really nothing short of Herculean. And now I'm stuck trying to do levels of that for Chris's birthday game. And now I have HeroClix all over my friggin' desk. It's really a mess. But the narration was amazing, really, and everybody had a great time. It certainly rang the bell where it should have. The only piece of advice I would have given for this retroactively, and knowing that we were with the proviso, we really were keeping this in one game, is we should have spent some less time in the initial opening. Because, day one was heavy. And then that kind of when we got to the point where I'm getting a text with Partha Spell, as Tony, I know, this is some bullshit. Like, this wouldn't happen. Like, I'm not finding this mysterious spell part, but Liz is gently saying, let's reel it in, and I'm going to go along with it because I'm a DM, and I want to support you, and I want to get to the end of the story.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And to be honest, what would have happened over those nights is actually, like, I had, all of you were slowly going crazy, whether you knew it or not, because, like, the entity was taking over the town. And so the nighttime scenes were going to be nightmares. They were going to be, originally the text messages actually were kind of coded. So anyone who got them would have had to roll sanity. They probably would have had visions, lost sanity. So, like, Tony, your character may still have gotten a text message because that may just have been what happened, but there would have been a consequence to it that I thought would have been really interesting for your character to play out if we had had time, right? Like, if you open this text message at 3:33 in the morning and you're sucked into this, like, horror vision and you lose sanity, how does that then, like, impact you for the next couple of days? So that would have been there whether we cut things or not. It just would have been extended over two night scenes. Like, everyone would have had these nighttime horror experiences that were going to, like, chip away at your sanity and change you as a character regardless. I just had to throw that all into one night.
Now we definitely have to play again. But I would say a couple of things that I learned, even the things that I will implement. Like, I do some of them, but the level that you went to, I think the questions at the beginning for backstory, we talked a little bit about it on the last one. I think providing people, no matter what it is, like very often I'll say, give me a couple sentences about your character. But that's so very open. When you give somebody a set of questions there, all of a sudden it gives me something pointed to answer versus just this empty space where it's just out in the air there and I have to come up with a couple questions. So I think that kind of idea, helping you to form your character through giving you some pointed questions about what is he like, what is he doesn't like, and stuff like that. I think all of the handouts really add to the immersion, and that's something you can implement in every game. I mean, Cthulhu, it works really great, but for any of your things, getting stuff into people's hands, different mediums like that, even that idea of that cinematic kind of idea there used correctly, really, because we're all adults at the table, we can handle that for the most part, right? You got to be some people can't, but in general we can handle it. I think that's good. And then I think it's the getting the players telling the same story, we're using that handout to get us all in town and all talking about things and being able to provide information. You seated everybody really nicely with stuff beforehand so that when they got there, they could talk. And even, you know, we're role playing, but we have some material to role play. Like, I'm not just having to think of things for Thomas to say. I know stuff that I've learned beforehand about the town. And then the last thing was the personal experience, too. I think finding a time to touch everyone at the table, make sure that everyone at the table, their character gets some level of shine, some level of focus there during a game one shot or over sessions or whatever like that is really important. And I think they really did a good job of that there. But I think all of those are good things that you can use just in any game, especially in Cthulhu, but in any game, to provide that level of a deeper immersion to the character where you really start to feel like you're part of it and you can start to contribute, you know, versus I'm not quite sure what the DM's talking about. I think there's a dragon in the next room and this kind of things like this one had a much more personal feel to it.
So, Chris, I think that you're, yeah, I agree with you. I like the idea. Now, again, and we were laughing a little about it. And, you know, it's not like the 20 questions with sub questions, but yes, like a couple questions that ask pointed things that in your game, whatever system you're running, whatever game you're running, what are the things that you want as the person running, as the DM, that's going to help me build out this world more, right? And I will say, like, it's funny, again, like Matt Colville and Professor DM, they both had things talking about backstory. But Colville himself, in his brand new, they just released an RPG called Draw Steel. It's like a heroic fantasy game, very D&D-ish, but a little different. They specifically have in their character creation area questions, like, what has your character lost? You know, like, it's things that, like, well, why are you adventuring? And if you give somebody, hey, what is this? What do you do about this? It's an easier thing than just that open, like, space of who am I, right? So I think that's a really good point and something that I also will probably lean into in the future. A couple things I would say, again, system, and know your system, and run the game that you want to play. So, Elizabeth, while you had not run a game prior to, you had played a lot of Cthulhu. So, while you hadn't run it, you had played a ton to be able to say, this is what I would want to do. So, you were able to bring that in and just say, okay, I have this chance. I'm going to do everything that I ever wanted to do in the game. It's kind of like what I talk about with when we on the cast about the Dragonlance campaign. I just did all the things that I wanted to do in it, and it turned out really great because it plays to your strengths as a person running the game. And the last thing I'll say is Tony was absolutely correct in his prediction from last episode that with this amount of prep for role play, we all hit the ground running right off the bat. I mean, even before the game, we were already, but we were able to hit the ground running and we had enough juice to let that run all night without ever really breaking it. So a very wild success. I think everybody there had a really great time. So that's going to be it for me. Obviously, this was not a listener question. This was our continuing escapade into this one shot they were doing where we bring new people into game with us, which is super fun. You got to do it. Bring people in to run games for you. Put new people at your table. You're going to learn stuff about your craft and about your own style. But we are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. So send us your problems, your questions, the issues you're running in your game table, and we'll jaw about them for, you know, the better part of an hour. You can reach us at our website, 3wisedms.com, and put it in the What's Your Problem field. You can reach out to us by email at 3wisedms@gmail.com. You can also get us on Facebook and Instagram. We are very, very active on those sites. I never did get that Blue Sky account active, so you can't reach us on that, but Facebook and Instagram, definitely. I appreciated that you didn't make us constantly roll for everything. Like, if I have to walk down a set of stairs, I have to make an athletics roll. If I want to shoot a gun, I have to make a gun roll. If I get in the car to go to the Giant to get some bread, make a drive auto roll. No. But there are times where you do need to make rolls. And when you do, you should have some really cool dice. So you can go to our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. You put in the code 3WISEDMS10. That's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10. And you get 10% off your order. I kind of got lost right there in the middle of saying all of that. So anyway, Elizabeth, thank you again for running the game. Thank you to John for being the plant. I think it was a perfect thing for a horror game.
Well done.
I think it was great for a horror game. And we hope to have a lot more of that in the future. So that's going to be it for us this episode, guys. And as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you to all of you listening from home. We really appreciate it. If you liked what you've been listening to, please smash that 5-star rating button. Let us know. Leave a good review. Tell your friends. That really helps us grow. If you'd like to hear us answer any question you have, send it to us at 3wisedms@gmail.com or go to our website, 3wisedms.com, and enter it in the What's Your Problem field. Or you can talk to us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're active on all those platforms, so feel free to drop by, you know, send us a question, and we'll see if we can make it on the show. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time, 3 Wise DMs.